I'm going to go to the hospital. जय ओम विष्णु पांचवा महंस कवि राजा कचार्य अस्त दरसत श्री श्रीमान इस डिवाइन ग्रेस है श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय इस खान फाउंडर आचार्य इस डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री प्रभुपाद की राज ग्रंथ श्रीमान भगवद गीता की श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की श्री श्री राधा बंकी बिहारी जी की श्री श्री गोर्धाय की श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव लेडी सुभद्र महारानी की सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जी की हरि नाम संकीर्तन की थाय गौरी Glories to the Assembly Votees, glories to the Assembly Votees, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru Rangka. So we want to welcome everyone. Friday evening Bhagavad Gita discussion. Okay, class. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
So, you have completed 67, 18th chapter, correct? And then 68 was begun but not really discussed. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm correct? Okay. So we can begin. We'll do 68, 69, and then also we'll maybe speak a little bit on the next verse. Yadidam paramam guhyam mad bhakteshu abhinashati bhaktim mayi param gridbha mam evaisya syat samsayaha Yaridam paramam guhyam mad bhakteshwa vidashati bhaktim mayi param kritva mam evaisya sya samsayaha Yaridam paramam guhyam Mam bhakteshva vidashati bhaktim mayi param kritva mam evaisya ya samsayaha
Yeah.
Jainam Paramahuryam
Bhakteshva Vidasyati
Bhakteshva Vidasyati
Bhaktimai Paramputva
Bhaktimai Paramputva
Me Vaishyatya Samshaya
Me Vaishyatya Samshaya.
Ya idam paramam guhyam Bhakteshva Vidasyati
Bhaktimai Paramputva
Mamevaishyatya Samshaya.
Anyone else? Ladies? Word for word, ya.
Anyone who?
Idam.
This.
Paramam.
Most.
Guyam.
Confidential secret.
Ma.
Of mine.
Bhakteshu.
Amongst devotees.
Abhidashati.
Explains.
Bhaktim.
Devotional service.
Mahi.
Unto me.
Param.
Transcendental.
Kridva.
Doing.
Mam.
Unto me.
Eva.
Certainly.
Esyati.
Comes.
Asamsayaha.
Without doubt.
Translation,
purport, by His Divine Grace,
A.C.
Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
For one who explains this supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed,
and at the end he will come back to me. Purport.
Generally, it is advised that Bhagavad Gita be discussed amongst the devotees only,
for those who are not devotees will understand neither Krishna nor Bhagavad Gita.
Those who do not accept Krishna as he is and Bhagavad Gita as it is should not try to explain Bhagavad Gita whimsically and become offenders.
Bhagavad Gita should be explained to persons who are ready to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
It is a subject matter for the devotees only and not for philosophical speculators.
Anyone, however, who tries sincerely to present Bhagavad Gita as it is will advance in devotional activities and reach the pure devotional state of life.
As a result of such pure devotion, he is sure to go back home,
back to Godhead.
Translation again, please repeat. For one who explains this supreme secret
To the devotees,
pure devotional service is guaranteed.
And at the end,
you will come back to me.
Om Agyan Timirandasya
Giranjana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena
Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha
Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale
Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padanti Kam
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuniptananda
Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinoda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare.
So we're coming to the final verses in the Bhagavad Gita. And here Krishna is summing up the qualifications for understanding this, as he says it, supreme secret. And he uses the word secret, which is interesting, because secret is something you don't tell to somebody, yet it's available for everyone.
How is that?
How can it be secret?
Yeah, how can it be secret if it's open for everyone to? In other words, the secret is that those who are not devoted and those who neither accept Krishna or Bhagavad Gita as it explained by Krishna, for them it remains a secret. And those who have the qualifications, they can understand. It's secret in the sense that there are qualifications to unravel the secret. And one has those qualifications, which are preliminary to the understanding of Bhagavad Gita, then gradually one can understand. And two things are mentioned here in order to understand this supreme secret. One has to be devoted, as opposed to one who is simply trying to philosophically speculate based on one's, what we say, prior experience with philosophy and knowledge. In other words, one has to accept the science as it is. And then the philosophical speculation that is allowed within the range of Bhagavad Gita is the principle of how to understand, and not the principle of trying to change or to filter it through one's own understanding. What is the mindset that allows one to understand this great secret? So one has to have some regard for Krishna. One has to have some devotion towards Krishna. Otherwise, this knowledge is dangerous in the hands of non-devotees. It's dangerous because they use it as an opportunity to understand how this material world works in order to somehow or other enhance their abilities to enjoy the material world. So this knowledge in the wrong hand is actually dangerous. Well, therefore Krishna calls it a secret, in the sense that he reveals it for those who are devoted. Otherwise, they get, people who are not devoted, they get something different. They don't understand Krishna. And Krishna, who's the speaker of Bhagavad Gita? It's Krishna. And you see, as you study Bhagavad Gita, there's so many verses, Krishna explains who he is. Naham sarvasya prapabho mata sarvam prapartanta iti matvav majanti mambuddha bhava samantaha. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything comes from me. He says everything. The wise who knows this, those who are actually wise, they know this. What is the result of that knowledge? They engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So one who knows that Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, and everything is coming here from him, everything is controlled by him, and ultimately everything is meant for his enjoyment, and they can enter into devotional service. They can understand Krishna. So this is the qualifications for understanding. Krishna also says, Matta parataram nanya kinchit asti dhananjaya mayi sarvam idam proktam sruti gunam mata iva. He says, O Dhananjaya, there is no truth superior than me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So everything rests upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, both material and spiritual. Krishna also says, Maya dakshina prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanam kantaya jagavivari parti. This material energy is working under my direction and is producing all moving and non-moving beings. By its will, it's created and annihilated again and again. So many verses in Gita. Aham ahi devanam, I am the source of the demigods. There are so many verses where Krishna establishes himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you see, when you study Bhagavad Gita, there's no verse that says Sri Krishna Vacha. right? The Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Why? Why didn't Vyasadeva put Sri Krishna Uvacha when he wrote down the Bhagavad Gita? Because then people will think, well, Krishna is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, but he's not God. Therefore, the word Bhagavan represents Krishna as the source of everything. He is the embodiment of all opulences. He is the cause of all causes. Ishwara Parma Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadirada Govinda Sarva Karna Karna. And he is the cause of all causes. So the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. He's speaking, but he is Bhagavan. So that knowledge is given in that respect, so people don't misunderstand who is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. He's not some, you know, very powerful personality, or even some demigod. He is actually the source of everything. Therefore, this knowledge is perfect. Because when you have the perfect source, you get the perfect knowledge. And therefore, who can speculate on the perfect knowledge? No one. They can just try to understand it. Because perfection is revealed through the proper way to understand perfection. And how is that proper way to understand it? Through one who knows Krishna. Or through the spiritual master. The spiritual master can explain what Krishna is saying. How many editions of Bhagavad Gita are there? About 700. There's one lecture Prabhupada said, 664, he said. But that was 30 years ago. So we might say, nice guess would be around 700. So therefore, how many of those editions actually glorify Krishna as the speaker of Bhagavad Gita? Very few. When Prabhupada first came out, he was preaching about Bhagavad Gita, and he was using someone else's Bhagavad Gita. And there was one verse from the ninth chapter, Manmana Bhava Madbhakta Mam Yaji Mam Namaskaru Mami Vaishasi. Mami, what is that? Mami Vaishasi. Not the other one. Duktava Matparatmaya Parayana. That, always become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me. What is the other one? Think of me. These are the four qualifications of a devotee. He becomes Krishna's devotee, thinks of Krishna, offers his obeisances, and offers his and he thinks of Krishna. Thinks of Krishna, becomes Krishna, offers obeisances, and offers worship to Krishna. Four things. And after the verse was explained, the purport said, it's not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but it's the unborn, unmanifested aspect within Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, just see, what a rascal. Krishna is saying surrender to me, and this commentator is saying not to surrender to Krishna. So that kind of philosophy is not really going to help anyone. It simply diverts one away from the true teachings. Therefore, one has to hear this knowledge from those who are, let me say, engaged in pure devotional service, from the pure devotee. Therefore, when you read these purports, you're hearing directly from Krishna's pure devotee. And therefore, you're getting the knowledge, as Prabhupada said, as it is. Not like, as I see it. Bhagavad Gita, as I see it. Or as Bhagavad Gita, as it should be. Yes, you know, there's many like that. So this is a great science, and this science reveals Krishna. And therefore the revelation has to be applied according to certain qualifications and kind. Therefore, what is the qualification for understanding Bhagavad Gita? Submissive oral reception with a desire to understand. One may pose questions, and one may discuss those points, but ultimately one has to accept the conclusion of the authorities. And that is like remaining chaste to what we say the parampara, remaining chaste to the actual understanding. So does that make one docile or unphilosophical? Actually, no. It actually makes one very, very intelligent, because to understand this knowledge is very difficult. Therefore, Krishna says, those who are not devoted, they don't have that qualification. But what if you say, well, I want to understand this, but I'm not really devoted. Then as you try to understand it, in your attempt to understand it, try to understand that you also should be devoted. It's more like it allows the understanding to come. Because Krishna makes the thing very clear that these are the qualifications to approach him. Krishna is Bhaktivatsal. There is Bhaktivatsal, Jnanavatsal, Yogavatsal, Karmavatsal. One vatsal means one who is attracted through this type of activity. So Krishna is not attracted by our activities, nor by our knowledge, nor by our austerities, nor by our position in society, nor by anything. What attracts Krishna? Devotion. Devotion. Devotion is the element that attracts Krishna, because Krishna doesn't need all these other things. He may accept them as part of our devotion, because knowledge allows for devotion to be directed in the proper way. But the principle is that one has to have devotion to Krishna. That is the principle for understanding Krishna. That's why we see, and it's quite common, that there are many who have great philosophical knowledge on the scriptures, but do not practice any kind of devotion to the Lord, and therefore it remains theoretical. It's like going into a restaurant and sitting down at the table and reading the menu and then walking out and saying, that was a great meal. What's the value? I mean, you read the menu and it's supposed to inspire you to take something, right? But not simply to, that's the end. You come to the Hare Krishna temple, and Mataji cooks a nice feast. You walk up to them, you see all the wonderful, oh, this looks so good. Thank you very much, I'm so satisfied. You just walk out. That was a great meal. No, you're supposed to. Therefore, one has to dive into this by practicing the principles of devotion. What was Arjuna's qualification? Arjuna's qualification was that he was a devotee. Therefore, Krishna spoke this science to Arjuna in order to teach him what was the proper understanding. Arjuna apparently became overcome with illusion. He fell into the bodily conception of life and saw the instructions of Krishna as being material, or being what we say. He saw Krishna's instructions as being detrimental to progress for himself and for others. This is an interesting point, because the instruction is given, and we look at it and we try to understand it. How is this beneficial for me? We cannot see how it's beneficial. But that is the nature of devotional service, is that as you practice it, it reveals itself. In the material world, when people want to do something, they measure the consequences, maybe get experiences from others, and try to understand. And then when they're sure that there's some benefit in it, they may proceed in that direction. But in devotional service, there is an element of faith that allows one to take up something that may be a little bit difficult to understand. That through that faith and through that practice, I will gain knowledge, I will gain understanding, I will gain a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So one who has that faith, then as they practice the process, Krishna reveals himself gradually. And that's why academic qualifications cannot penetrate spiritual knowledge remains external. Until one engages in the process, then the philosophy is meant to awaken the desire to serve Krishna. The philosophy is meant to awaken our desire to practice the tenets that are being taught in Bhagavad Gita. Because Krishna explains in this, in the previous verses, what did he say in verse 1866? Who knows? You just did that verse. What was 1866? Huh? Sarva dharma parikshitya mame kam saranam praja aham tvam sarva papaya mokshi yashami masi. Krishna says, surrender to me. Abandon all your other attempts to somehow or other become advanced in your spiritual practice. And if you simply through the process of surrender, then he says, I will take care of everything. But then after Krishna said that, you know what? You know what he thought? Krishna reflected on that after he said that. He said, I made it too hard. I met people saying, Krishna wants me to surrender. Who is he to ask me to surrender to him? It's too difficult. So he came again as Lord Chaitanya and said, don't worry about surrender. Just chant, dance, and take prasadam. Then he made the process more easier. Right? Because surrender means I have to give up something. I have to change my life. I have to somehow stop my attempts to be happy and accept Krishna's plan for myself. Now, I may not want to do that. It's not easy, right? Especially if I don't know who Krishna is. You know? Before you can really surrender to someone, you have to have some faith that that person is going to give you exactly what you need and more, right? You love your parents because through your whole life there's some contact that they've taken care of you. So you have faith that through that continual obedience, then there will be continual protection and guidance and care because the experience is already there. But how much experience do we have with Krishna? And he remains so far aloof from our daily life. And then all of a sudden, here comes this book, Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, give it all up. Stop all your nonsense and surrender to me. Boy, that's not even... I don't know if I want to do that. But then Krishna says, don't worry, just chant. Just take prasadam. Like that. And studying Bhagavad Gita and studying Srimad Bhagavatam helps us to understand who Krishna is, why he appeared in this material world, and what is our relationship with him. And when we're convinced of that, then the process of surrender not only becomes easy, but it's natural. It's natural. Because then we have that faith that whatever Krishna says, coming through Krishna's representative, who are devoted to making sure that whatever they do is based on Krishna's teachings, then we can have that faith to surrender like that. Now this is the particular purport that is being said here, that one who has devotion to Krishna and one who accepts Krishna, and then everything is revealed gradually. So the whole teaching of Bhagavad Gita, what was the whole teaching of Bhagavad Gita to? What was the whole thing about? Why did Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita? What's the purpose? So we could sell some books? What was Bhagavad Gita, or why did Krishna speak Gita?
Devotional service.
Yeah, but more specific. You got the idea. Yeah, but take it back 5,000 years. Why did he speak it then? To get Arjuna to surrender. The whole thing is to convince Arjuna to do what he was supposed to do. And the whole philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is a back and forth discussion between Krishna and Arjuna on the principles that lead up to this last chapter, that after all that, now you've heard it all, you know, you've asked all the questions, there's nothing left, surrender. And then Arjuna, of course you'll see, it's coming up in a few verses, Arjuna eventually, as he says, now I'm convinced beyond doubt that what you have explained to me, there is no more hesitation on my part. Not only no hesitation, but I am eager to accept your words. So that was the whole point. So the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to take us to the point where Arjuna actually came, that there's no more doubt in my mind, that we can simply accept Krishna's words. It's not an academic scripture. It's a philosophical devotional scripture that brings about awareness of our relationship with Krishna. Okay. Any discussion on this one, this section? We can go on to the next verse. Any questions from any previous verses? Anyone? Yes? Question? We have to try to understand what Krishna is saying here. The supreme secret is given to the devotees. That, I mean, our concept of what devotees is and what is being said here is different. Devotees don't mean, you know, sika, mala. One, devotees in the sense that means that one who is devoted to the Lord, one who has faith in the Lord, one who accepts. Prabhupada explains, devotee in this case means that I understand that this teaching is true and that it is spoken by the Supreme Lord. That is the qualification for the devotee, the word devotee in this. Two things. That I accept it and it is spoken by the Supreme Lord. I mean, there are many people who accept it, but they say it's not spoken by God. And there's many people who say it's spoken by God, but they don't accept it. So we have both. But you need both. That it's perfect, it's coming from the Supreme Personality of God. And so, therefore, those qualifications make you a devotee in this sense of this terminology here. And then from there, everything can be revealed gradually. Because if you think it's not Krishna, I remember I read many years ago, this is back in 1980. I think it was around 1989. I read a very long appreciation, glorification for Bhagavad Gita. It was about 20 pages, an article. Beautiful glorification. But I noticed in the article, it didn't mention Krishna as God. It was appreciating the poetry, the philosophy, the expression, the perfection of the Sanskrit, all the ornamentations of Gita. But it didn't have any reference. So I looked up the author, found that he was a professor at the University of Georgia, and then I wrote him a letter, sent him a Bhagavad Gita as it is, along with another book, which was a commentation on Bhagavad Gita. And then I waited, and I got no response. And then I called him up. I got him in his office. And he answered the phone. He said, oh, yes, I got it, yes. Oh, you're a Hare Krishna. He said, yes, I am. He said, oh, yeah, thank you for the book, but I really don't really want to discuss anything else. Thank you. So he pretty much put me off. Because in my letter I explained that you're glorifying Gita, but you forgot about mentioning who the position of the speaker is, and that's important. Otherwise, it remains a nice philosophical, ornamental piece of literature that may decorate someone's bookshelf and have nice discussion on it, but that's as far as it goes. It doesn't really do the job until we accept that this is spoken by God Himself, and therefore it's perfect. And it's explained by His pure devotees, therefore that knowledge is given to us in the purest and most, what we say, deepest of all understandings. And that's important. And that develops faith in these words. So our position is, by accepting those two principles, then gradually the knowledge will become revealed. Because there's two kinds of knowledge. One is called jnana, and one is called vigata. Vigata, from the V comes the word for vigata, means intensification. And so knowledge, in the word vidya or jnana, means theoretical. Knowledge that has come by way of discussion, by way of, you know, reading and discussion like that. But vigyan means when you apply that knowledge to your life and you get the realization in your day-to-day life of this knowledge and how it works. And then it becomes a part of you. Then you live the knowledge, and not the knowledge just becomes just some external aspect of, you know, your life. It becomes part of you. And that's what this knowledge is meant to be. It's meant to become part of us, because it is. It's meant to come out and become part of our day-to-day life. It's not that, oh yes, I know Bhagavad Gita, but still I smoke. Still I have illicit sex. Still I do this, I do that. Yes, but Bhagavad Gita is very nice. I have 10 copies of all the editions, and different editions. What is that? It's not. This is meant... What do they say? Information, 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 no transformation. That's not. Knowledge is meant to change you, to bring you. It's like coming from a silkworm to a butterfly. You're meant to evolve through the process of knowledge. If there's no change, then what is the value? So, how does that change come about? By applying the philosophy to your life. That's all. Whether you live in the temple, or whether you're initiated or not, that doesn't matter. It means how much you accept this knowledge and apply it in your life. That's the point. And then knowledge is actually becomes a source of freedom, happiness, and ultimately awareness of the Supreme Lord. This knowledge can bring us to God as long as we practice it in our life. Okay, that's the qualifications. That's what it means in a sense, devotee. One who accepts this as truth and accepts the speaker as the Supreme Lord. If you accept the speaker as the Supreme Lord, you accept this as truth, and you don't follow it, something's wrong, isn't it? If you come in contact with the absolute truth and you think, well, I still have a choice. No, you don't have a choice. You have to accept it. That means otherwise you don't understand what is your welfare. So that's all. That's what Krishna is saying. It's meant for transformation. Any other questions? Yes.
As you were mentioning the professor, I was thinking that he writes, the professors usually have quite a bit of material, and they're usually going to praise other colleagues. And I was just thinking maybe both the analytical material and they also make commentary on the person you're looking to. It's so strange that they come, will come in contact with Bhagavad Gita and be wrong about the other.
It's a very good point you made. Generally, you find that in the world that, oh, this is a wonderful piece of work, but I don't care for the author. He's a bum. It's not even logical. It's not even, what do you say, ethical. You have to recognize the speaker along with what is being spoken. And the speaker is just as important or even more important than what's being spoken. Because what is spoken is really incidental in terms of who's speaking it. You know, if this was spoken by Ravana, you might think, well, sounds good, but the source is kind of a little off, you know. So you may think twice about accepting it. But it's spoken by the perfect person who has no other concern for speaking it than for the welfare of those who hear it. That's the point. Krishna speaks for our benefit. He's not trying to sell his Gita. He's not trying to be popular. Krishna's not looking for popularity. Because he's God, he doesn't have to worry about popularity. He's already popular. So there's no motive. In other words, the point is Krishna is not motivated in his presentation. The presentation is simply an act of compassion for the suffering conditioned souls. And who is Arjuna? Arjuna represents all of us. He represents all of us in the sense that he is in the position of being, what we say, covered by illusion. And therefore he's trying to get out of that. He can't understand Krishna's words, therefore he has faith in Krishna, but Krishna's words don't really resonate with him. So gradually, he has faith, but he's trying. So he's in the right position because he understands how to approach. But he's posing his questions. There are 28 statements by Arjuna in this Bhagavad Gita. And the rest of them. There's some by Sanjay, there's I think 7 by Sanjay, 28 by Arjuna, and the rest are spoken by Krishna. So Krishna spoke mostly all the verses. And guess how long he took him to speak this? Prabhupada said half hour. And the point was Arjuna understood it in a half hour. Have you ever tried to read Bhagavad Gita in a half hour? You can't even read it in a half hour. The speaker understanding it in a half hour. But that was the quality of Arjuna. He was a highly intelligent person. Okay, let's go on to the next two verses, and then we'll stop here. Na cha tasman manushesu kaschit me priyakrita maha bhavita na cha mam tasmad anya priyataro bhuvi. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Adyasyate chayam imam dharmyasam vadam avayo jnana yagena tenaham istasvam iti me matihi. And I declare, that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. Now Krishna concludes in verse 69 what he begins in verse 68, is that one who explains the secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed. At the end he comes back to me. And then Krishna confirms that this person who explains this science to others, there is no servant more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. So in this particular verse, and the next one, you find that there's no purport. And there's a reason why. Well, why didn't Srila Prabhupada give purports to at least two? Oh, wait. Or in many of the other verses? What would be your, you know, thought when you think, why was there no purport? As opposed to why, yes? Because there's something before somewhere else? Good point. I didn't think of that one. Good point. That may also be true. It may be that same principle has been already emphasized in some previous verses. That's a good point. Therefore, there's no need to repeat it. But there's another meaning. There's another. The translation explains everything. We can assume that. That the translation is self-explanatory and there's no need for any further discussion. It's self-illuminating. It's like the sun. That's nice. But even on this point, we can speak. Prabhupada could have spoken on it. How explaining what is the nature of that person Krishna is speaking about, and what is his activities, what is his qualifications. But there's another reason. It's okay. So we have explained in the previous, explained in the later. Very good. That's an intelligent thought. Very good. I like that. There's another reason.
I'm not sure if I know, but Moses was part of our group of actually the commentators of him as a child.
Yeah.
And maybe that there's another commentary, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And previous acharyas already given their commentaries on the Gita, and therefore, in order to stay chaste to the previous acharyas, the present acharya doesn't try to overshadow the previous acharyas by becoming more intelligent. He takes whatever they have given and he expands on it. In many cases, when there's no purport, he remains. That's good. I like, that's the one I like. And that shows that there is a chastity for the parampara, and which makes that person qualified to speak like that.
Does that mean that previous acharya didn't explain more?
Generally, yeah, because Prabhupada, in all his purports, he had the works of the previous acharyas as his, you know, guiding principle. He did that. In the case of Bhagavad Gita, it was the work of Baladev. He gives regard to Baladev Vidyabhushan in the very beginning. And in the Bhagavatam, there's a whole series. To Baladev Vidyabhushan presented so nicely in the Gita Bhashya and commentary with us. So he mentions, and of course, Vyasadev also, he wrote down Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati didn't do a commentation on Bhagavad Gita, but he did one on Srimad Bhagavatam and he did one on Chaitanya Bhagavan. Like that. So, yeah. And generally, it's the remaining chaste to the previous acharyas. What was your point once again?
Doesn't mean that
Acharya didn't commentate. Generally, I would say that's true. Of course, I don't have that records, but that's the understanding that we have. And through our discussions, we have concluded that Srila Prabhupada remaining chaste to the previous acharyas, because we also have that story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where who is it? Vallabhacharya. He came up to Lord Chaitanya, he had a commentary, he wrote a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was proud of it, and he was also quite devotional and very, very intelligent. And he said, My dear Lord, I have presented a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam which surpasses Sridhar Swami's commentary. And Lord Chaitanya said, one who does not accept a Swami is a prostitute. And then Lord Chaitanya meant the word Swami as husband. So a woman who doesn't accept her husband, she's a prostitute. So therefore, you do not accept the Swami, therefore I am not going to accept what you say. So he completely rejected Sridhar Swami's words. I mean, he did, on Vallabhacharya's commentary. No one would listen to his word because, you know, he thought he was more intelligent. If you think you're more intelligent than the previous acharyas, then that's a disqualification immediately. You take their commentary and you also pray for their mercy, and then that way you are. If the Lord isn't pleased, then He empowers you to write. He empowers you to speak. Not that we have any, you know, superior knowledge than the great than those who have come before us. We simply present what they say according to time, place and circumstances, and that's what acharya means. Not that we have something new. There's nothing new. In fact, religious principle are as old as time. But people get tired of the same thing. So the acharyas have to take the same philosophy and present it in a new way, and people say, oh, it's something new. And therefore they get inspired again to take up some process. But it's the same stuff. It's old wine in new bottles, as they say. That's all. And that's the business of the devotees, is to be able, and this is important for preachers and for those who are in any position of leadership, you have to be able to use your intelligence to see how best to take those who you're trying to help according to the principles, but also according to how best they can receive those principles without changing the foundation and the essence and allowing them to grow from that point. That is acharya, that is preacher. There's those who just want to parrot. They just, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said. That's nice, yeah. Prabhupada said, that's good, very good. I mean, that's repeating. But what do you say about what Prabhupada said? Right? I mean, Prabhupada also said a lot of things that you can't repeat because it doesn't fit according to time, place, and circumstance. You have to know, be able to take what Prabhupada is saying and apply it to time, place, and circumstance. If you don't have that vision, you can't really change the hearts and minds of anyone. That's the point. Because Prabhupada also said a lot of things that were opposite to what he said previously. How is that? You read his letters, you read his books. Different slokas for different focus. We say different strokes for different folks, but yeah, it's like that, you know. It's, you know, there's so many. What is that verse? God. I know the last. Mahajano yena kata sampanta. That the one philosopher is not a philosopher unless he differs from another philosopher. Else he can't be called a philosopher. So therefore the words of the scriptures are so variegated. Otherwise, where is religious principles hidden? It's hidden in the hearts of the self-realized souls. So therefore, in order to understand this, one has to approach one who is self-realized. Otherwise, people have, you know, they have their own interpretation of what is being said here. And that is, so that's what is basically being said in this section here. That one is an acharya, one is able to understand the principles of the acharya and how what he's and take that and apply it according to time, place, and circumstance. And that's not easy. Okay, and that's what Prabhupada did. When he could make a difference, he did, and when he wanted to just leave it alone, he also did. Not trying to suppress, but trying to only apply according to the temperament of the times. Okay. Any other discussions on this section here? What does Krishna say, mean when he says, there's no servant in this world more dear to me than he? Who is he referring to? What is Krishna, who is he asking, who is he referring to? In other words, one who gives this knowledge to others. One who, yeah. Well, yeah, but we have a stereotyped view of that also. We tend to see a preacher as someone who has a certain position. But anyone who gives this knowledge to others is considered dear to Krishna. They may be a pot washer. In other words, it's not a position, but it's those who have understood and somehow want to reach out to others. In other words, Lord Chaitanya has said, there's two things that we said that are important. Become Krishna conscious and give this knowledge to others. This makes up devotional service. Become my representatives. Explain this knowledge to others. And when you explain this knowledge to others according to your understanding, what do you do for yourself? What is the benefit that you get from doing that? You get devotional service, but in a practical sense. When you speak to others, what happens to you? You get realizations, yeah. When you speak this, you get realizations of what you speak. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Guru Maharaj of Chandra, he was very expert at giving statistics. And one of the things he told me, he's preached it, he said, people generally remember, this was a statistic in America, remember 10% of what they read. They remember 20% of what they hear, 30% of what they see, 50% of what they see and hear together, when visual and audio combined, the memorization increases, 70% of what they do, and 90% of what they teach. So if you want to remember, which is really the basis of the results of everything you do is to remember, then speak it. Speak this knowledge to others, to your friends, to your family, to everyone in general. Whatever way you can. And Krishna will inspire you if you have that desire. That's all. Speak this knowledge. Not in a self-righteous, condescending, holier-than-thou attitude, but in a way that somehow is able to reach people in such a way that they're inspired to listen like that. That's important. Yes.
Ah.
What's that statement? Your actions are so. Actions speak louder, but. I can't hear what you're saying. What's the first part of that? Yeah. Something like your actions are this, and I can't hear what you're saying. In other words, you're saying so many things, but why, if it's so good, why don't you do it? If what you're saying is so good, what about you? Well, that's for you. Mm-hmm. It's like a father comes up to the son, don't smoke. Don't smoke. Don't smoke. It's not good for you. He's smoking. He's telling the kid not to smoke. You know, when you get grown up, then you can be bad. But when you're young, you should be good. It's silly, right? You know. What is that? Prabhupada said, example is higher than precept. Example is higher than precept. In other words, if you live, even if you don't preach, but if you live the principles, that is also preaching. That is also preaching. And if you can do both, Sanatan Goswami said to Haridas Thakur, some people preach, but their behavior is not so good. And some people's behavior is very good, but they don't preach. But you are the best, because you're preaching and you have the best of all behavior. So if we can combine those two qualities, that is ideal. But we see that from both angles, these were good. To have good behavior, or have those behavior that's in line with what is being explained as a way of practicing devotional life. That is preaching in itself. That is preaching in itself. So when people speak like that, then you have to say, well, if it's so good, why don't you practice it? It's a logical response, isn't it? If it's so good, why don't you do it? What was it yesterday? It was Upendra's daughter, right? Radhika, her name is? And then, what was it? Ananta Rupa was saying to Upendra's daughter, you should chant one round according to how old you are. Now you're 6 or 7, you should chant 7 rounds. She said, how old are you? So, I mean, it was a nice sentiment, but didn't have much philosophy behind it. So, that was the words of wisdom of a child. No, I mean, whatever or not the Rupa said was correct, but he didn't consider the practical aspect of it. So, using that as, you know, an example, we have to see that actually precept is higher. And then if we can combine our words along with our actions, then that's very powerful. That's very powerful. That's the message. Because you find both. And generally you find people who are like to speak, but they have, their qualifications are not in line with what they're saying. So therefore, Prabhupada said you should speak according to your level of realization. But sometimes we speak beyond that in order to inspire people to shoot for something, to understand what is the ideal. Like sometimes I say things that are the absolute principle, and we're on so far maybe removed from the absolute principle. It's not that it's a criticism if you're not on the absolute side. It means you simply see, well, there's the absolute, and here I am. What do I need to go from here to there? What is the next step to get to there from where I am? So then we have to explain that along with our understanding of how, what is the goal. So that is also part of preaching, that to take people to the next step like that. You can do that on a one-on-one basis. When we're doing it in a group, then we generally speak in general, give some of the principles that may apply in all aspects of devotional life. Yes?
I was just trying to understand what extent does that mean?
understands it. What is the
answer? Good question. What is Krishna saying? What is Krishna's intentions here? So let's see if we can find that in his words. Is there any verses in the previous one that give an indication of So he, one who explains this supreme secret. So he refers to this supreme secret. So he's referring to this knowledge which he has given as Bhagavad Gita. So one who preaches the message of Bhagavad Gita, that would be mine. One who preaches that the Lord is the supreme personality of Godhead, his name is Krishna, and the goal of life is simply to follow his instructions. Prabhupada liked little Saraswati, Malati's daughter. Right? Sweet story. She would go up to people at the Sunday feast, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And they would say, "No." She would say, "He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Prabhupada said that was perfect preaching. She didn't know much, but she knew that Krishna was God. So here, it's explained that one who speaks this message of Bhagavad Gita becomes dear to Krishna. Here, anyone, however, who tries sincerely to present Bhagavad Gita as it is, will advance in devotional service, advance in devotional life, and reach the pure devotional state of life. So Prabhupada mentions, anyone, however, who tries sincerely to present Bhagavad Gita as it is, so what does it mean to sincerely try to present it as? That means to repeat the previous acharyas. But we have to be able to repeat, and we can do that. But when you repeat with realization, then it's powerful. To repeat is perfect. But when you repeat and you practice the process, you get realization. Realization comes with practice. One may repeat, and one may believe, and one may be chased to the words of the previous acharyas, but the power to change others comes in the practice. It comes in the practice. Yes? Yes, but you also have to practice it. Because if you repeat it long enough without practice, you'll get tired of repeating it. Because your repeating is meant to help you to practice it also. And basically, when you preach, you're really preaching to yourself. Really, when it comes right down. And that's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, if nobody comes, preach to the four walls. Why? Because that's our duty to preach. And we will benefit simply by following the process of preaching to others. Preaching. Yeah. Yeah, and we're assisting him by just repeating his words. Yeah, we're assisting. We can take it, we simply try to assist him in his preaching mission. And we can, and when you say pure devotee, that means we also should become pure devotees. Because the soul is by nature pure. And to engage in devotional service means to purify oneself, to reach the purified form. Some people, I remember there was some exchange. Someone said to Prabhupada, that's because you're a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, why don't you become a pure devotee? Yes, I'm a pure devotee, but what about you? It's like, not to criticize another religion, but some people say, you know, Jesus Christ, he was so great, but we are sinners. We can't, you know, we're just sinners. But the idea is to stop your sinning. That's why Christ came, not only to free you from your reactions of your sins, but to teach you how to stop sinning. Otherwise, what's the value of his teachings? If he's the only one. It's not the pure... Srila Prabhupada, ki jai, go ahead, Prabhupada, go for it. Yeah, you're the man, right? Us, we're just so fallen, we can't do anything. We remained in the background, cheering on the pure devotees, right? No, that's not the idea. The idea is to become also pure, but to strive for that position of purity. Because why do we want to become pure? Because we want to reach the goal of life, which is, it's the goal of life, to experience unlimited joy in association with the Supreme Lord eternally, in full knowledge. That's the soul's nature. Purity is our nature. It's not like, well, it's something like, you know, like a rare coin. If you find a rare coin every once in a while, no, everyone's meant to become pure. Sounds good? How do you become pure? Chant Hare Krishna. How do you become pure? Just follow the instructions of those who are pure. That's all. As you chant, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, purifies the mind and heart, Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvapanam, pushes back the fire of material existence, Shreya Kaiva Vichandrika Vitaram, awakens our good fortune, Vidhavahu Jivanam, gives transcendental knowledge, Anandam Bhudi Varnanam, it's an ocean of unlimited transcendental happiness. Patipadam Puram Rita Svardhanam. It teaches us what is our relationship with Krishna. Every step of the process, newer and newer realizations are given. Sarvatma Snapadam. Nothing is untouched. Outside and within, everything is purified. Nothing is left. Absolute. The holy name is powerful. It can bring one to the perfectional platform. You simply chant the holy name, follow some simple principles, make your life perfect. Then as you read these scriptures, they become alive. Then they become part of it. Then they actually, you can see how wonderful and how relevant they are to you. And that's what Prabhupada's, one of his outstanding qualities, he could talk to the Western mind. He made these purports for the Western mind, for those of us living in the Western countries, to make them understandable. He said, that's what I was trying to do. Try to make this understandable for the people of the West. That was his, what we say, his glorious achievement, yes.
Right now, everyone has Western mentality. Western technology. That's what's good for everyone. Because in India, even if you're sitting anywhere in the whole world, thinking about, you know, car, TV, internet, Western, modern.
Yeah, it's monoculture now. And it's become one culture everywhere in the world now. Everything it amalgamates into, you know, technology. Haribo, welcome to hell. Everyone is more happier now, right? No. Yes.
You mentioned about purity, becoming pure. What are the symptoms? How do you know that you are beginning
to your... Ah, good question. Two things. How do you know, we might rephrase the question, how do you know you're making advancement? Yeah. Is that good? Okay, two things. When you're sick, you have a fever, how do you know you're getting well? If you're sick and you have a fever, your temperature is 102. How do you know when you're getting better from your fever? Yeah, it's going down. Good, very good. In other words, you keep checking the temperature, and if it goes down, it means you're getting well. So the fever to enjoy this material world is the disease. It's called bhava rog, the desire to find happiness through material sense gratification. As that desire goes down, and as one's desire to learn and to serve the Supreme Lord increases, then we can say we're making advancement. More interested in devotional life, less interested in material activities. Less interested in finding happiness through material activities. That's the point. Looking for happiness in material activities. When we're losing that interest, when we're looking for our happiness in Krishna, the more we look in that way, we can say, yes, the fever's going down. That's the main one. But there's another way. That's the main one. The other one is, how much am I developing the qualities that are conducive to devotional life? Am I becoming more humble, more tolerant, more patient, more, you know, kind, more giving, more enthusiastic to serve, more clean, living by truth, more knowledge? In other words, those qualities that are mentioned in the Gita and in the Bhagavatam that are conducive to the practice of pure devotional service. And Krishna mentions, the Bhagavatam mentions, there are 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. Check out those qualities and see how much you're actually developing these qualities. That's also another barometer for testing. Those two things. But the first one is probably the most important. Because actually, as you're doing the first one, you're also developing the qualities. As you're becoming more interested in spiritual life, you're developing those qualities. Should be, anyway. Should be. Okay, yes, Bhattaji. In what context was that being spoken?
He said Vaishnava principles. He didn't say the four principles.
Vaishnava principles. In other words, what is the first principle in devotional service that makes one, you know, qualified to receive this knowledge? Well, yeah, but there's a certain quality that allows one has to be somewhat submissive. So if one is chanting but is not submissive to the previous acharyas or to the present acharyas, actually later chanting is not really doing much. Because when you're chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what are you saying to the Lord? What is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's? Please engage me in your devotional service. That's the actual translation of the mantra according to the acharyas. So if you're chanting, but at the same time you're rejecting Krishna's mercy, then really you're not really getting the mercy of the holy name. It's more like five letters. It doesn't mean you should stop chanting. It means you should follow the other half. Because, well, if you follow the other half, the chanting's not going to do you any good. I mean, I know people who have been chanting for 25 years, and there's the same way they were five when they were doing it 20 years ago. Nothing's changed in their life. Why? There may be a number of reasons. Because they've not taken up the essential principles that allow the chanting to take hold in their life. And what is those essential principles? Accepting the authority of the spiritual master and following his teachings. But Krishna comes in the form of Guru. Guru is actually the manifestation of Krishna in person. There is Krishna who is served and Krishna who is being served. Krishna who is served is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and Krishna who is being served is his pure representative. Krishna who is serving is his pure representative. Krishna who is being served is Krishna. Two aspects of the Absolute. The pure devotee is also part of the Absolute Truth. And without obedience to the pure souls, you may practice the process, but it's like rowing the boat with the anchor still down. But Prabhupada wouldn't tell you to stop chanting. He's just saying, practically, it's useless because you're not understanding what it means to chant. So in the beginning, we inspire people to chant, and hopefully they'll learn part two. And then part three. But if you stay in part one all your life, then that's when you stay. You may get some freedom from suffering, but that's all you'll get. You won't get any more than that. Any other questions? Okay. Interesting? Yes? Okay. Keep going. The last few texts really, really sum it up even more and more complete. Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.